Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So continuing our reading from the second chapter of the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. And we'll be finishing the chapter today with text 61. Sri Narada Uvacha Iti Daitya Pater Vakyam Ditir Akarnya Sashnusha Putra Shokam Kshanat Tyaktva Tatve Chittam Ara Adaryat Adarayat Sri Narada Vacha Iti Daitya Pater Vakyam Ditir Akarnya Sashnusha Putra Shokam Kshanat Tyaktva Tatve Chittam Adarayat Sri Narada Vacha Iti Daitya Pater Vakyam Ditir Akarnya Sashnusha Putra Shokam Kshanat Tyaktva Tatve Chittam Adarayat Madhuji's, please. Sri Narada Uvacha, Sri Narada Muni said, Iti, thus, Daitya Patehe, of the King of the Demons, Vakyam, the speech, Ditihi, Diti, the mother of Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyaksha, Akarnya, hearing. Sasnusha, with the wife of Hiranyaksha. Putrashokam, the great bereavement for her son. here in Yaksha. Kshanat, immediately. Tyaktva, giving up. Tatve, in the real philosophy of life. Chetam, heart. Adarayat, engaged. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Narada Muni continued, Diti, the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, heard the instructions of Hiranyakashipu along with her daughter-in-law, Rushabhanu, Hiranyaksha's wife. Then she forgot her grief over her son's death and thus engaged her mind and attention in understanding the real philosophy of life. Purport. When a relative dies, one certainly becomes very much interested in philosophy. But when the funeral ceremony is over, one again becomes attentive to materialism. Even daityas, who are materialistic persons, sometimes think of philosophy when some relative meets death. The technical term for this attitude of the materialistic person is shmashana vairagya, or detachment in a cemetery or place of cremation. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, four classes of men receive an understanding of spiritual life and God. Artha, the distressed, jigyasu, the inquisitive, artarti, one who desires material gains, and jnani, one who is searching for knowledge. Especially when one is very much distressed by material conditions, one becomes interested in God. Therefore, Kunti Devi said in her prayers to Krishna that she preferred distress to a happy mood of life. In the material world, one who is happy forgets Krishna, or God. But sometimes, if one is actually pious, but in distress, he remembers Krishna. Queen Kunti Devi therefore preferred distress because it's an opportunity for remembering Krishna. When Krishna was leaving Kunti Devi for his own country, Kunti Devi regretfully said that she was better off in distress because Krishna was always present. Whereas now that the Pandavas were situated in their kingdom, Krishna was going away. For a devotee, distress is an opportunity to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 2nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. Om Jnanatimirandasya Gananjanasalakaya Chakshur Unmilitangena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namang Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Buddhale Shimate Paladananda Samitone Namang Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Buddhale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Samitone Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shunivadi Pachichati Adesha Tarine. So this is a very significant verse, especially for devotees. Well, for everyone, but especially so for devotees. Oftentimes what I've seen in the brief time that I've been here is that when people come to Krishna consciousness, especially when they are distressed, since distress was being mentioned here, oftentimes what happens is they come to the temple, they join the ashram, and they start engaging full-time in Krishna consciousness. And the consequence is that their distress becomes alleviated. You know, before they were seeking shelter from the harsh miseries of material existence, just battering them on all sides, making life extremely difficult. And so they come and take shelter of Krishna out of their piety, and they get relief. They begin practicing, following the principles, getting up early, chanting their rounds, doing seva. And then shortly afterwards, they start getting relief from these material miseries they were experiencing, and all of a sudden, the world is seen as if through rose-colored glasses. All of a sudden, everything looks very rosy, very nice. The sun looks a little brighter. The people look a little more attractive. the enticements of the material world seem a little bit extra enticing. That desire to earn money seems a little bit stronger. Because all of a sudden, we're not in distress anymore. All of a sudden, we start thinking, ooh, life is nice. Let me enjoy. Without that urgency, without that pressing of material misery, people very easily forget what the ultimate point of life is all about. And just to be perfectly honest, life as a devotee is very easy. It's very comfortable. There aren't many pressures compared to the material world. You know, so very easily one can begin contemplating material enjoyment again. And this is one of the main reasons why people leave. I've heard so many stories in the past, and I've also seen it happen so many times. You know, in the past, there's those famous stories of, you know, devotees receiving their inheritance and then leaving and sending everything back, including their japa beads and dhotis and everything, saying, I won't need this anymore. You know, or devotees leaving, saying, oh, I'm going to go make $1 million for Krishna. I'll see you when I've got the $1 million. Starts out very well intentioned, naturally, because it's for Krishna, but in the end, you know, where are these people? Or, you know, even in the time that I've been here, see people and they have all these desires and they come to Krishna consciousness and all of a sudden they get inspiration, because that's what happens naturally when we come in touch with Krishna, we become inspired. But if we're still harboring too many material attachments, oftentimes that inspiration takes a wrong turn somewhere. So people think, oh, you know, I want to go out there and, you know, earn some money and, you know, support my parents. And, you know, it starts out very well intentioned, but in the end, it doesn't always end up that way. Or I want to go and, you know, be the next, you know, rock star or hip-hop artist or, you know, whatever. And then the people go out there and then they just struggle. They have a hard time. You know, every time devotees leave for these different material aspirations, out of my limited experience, I've never seen it turn out good. So that's why Queen Kunti, she's praying to Krishna that never let these calamities stop. I'll just read through a few of her prayers from the eighth chapter of the first canto. And these prayers are very nice. She's saying, O Hrishikesh, master of the senses and lord of the lords, you have released your mother Devaki, who was long imprisoned and distressed by the envious King Kamsa, and me and my children from a series of constant dangers. So Devaki, she's the mother of God. She gave birth to Vasudev. My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, and from the vicious assembly, from suffering during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashvatthama. So this is an important point to consider. Who these calamities are happening to? You know, in the previous verse I was mentioning these calamities that the mother of Vasudeva endured. Being imprisoned, having her life threatened by her brother, being treated so harshly. And then in this verse it's mentioning Draupadi, you know, the being saved from the vicious assembly. Draupadi was directly Lakshmi Devi herself. the goddess of fortune, come down to the material world. And the goddess of fortune herself is being harassed. It's having to undergo these miseries, being disrobed, being lost in the gambling match, and then having people trying to disrobe her publicly in an assembly. That's extreme distress. But Krishna saved her by supplying unlimited amounts of sari, cloth for her sari. And then you have the Pandavas, Arjuna and his brothers, all pure devotees, having their lives threatened in so many different ways, trying to... Their stepbrother attempted to poison them, attempted to burn them in the house of Lak, tried to kill them in so many different ways. Yet Krishna always protected them during these sufferings. Krishna was there to protect them during their exile in the forest. He was there to protect them for the year after the exile was over, but when they had to remain incognito. And then Queen Kunti says, and now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashvatthama. So Uttara, the mother of King Parikshit, her life and the life of King Parikshit was threatened because Ashvatthama sent this Brahmastra to kill him within the womb. So Krishna actually entered her womb and shielded Parikshit Maharaj from the Ashvatthama. From the Brahmastra weapon. And these are all pure devotees. Queen Kuti continues, I wish that all these calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. And then she continues, My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feelings. So, Kunti was remarking on the fact that all these calamities were over at this point. The Battle of Kurukshetra was over. All the miscreants had been punished. Everyone got their due. And because everything, all the difficulties were alleviated, now Krishna was leaving them. And Kunti was lamenting. She was saying, it's better that all these calamities continue happening and that we have your association than that we be in a time of peace and you leave us. And it's really significant also that she mentions that Krishna can only be easily approached by those who are materially exhausted. By people who still desire things in the material world, who still desire name, fame, basically all the different forms of lust, whether gross or subtle. For these people, it's not possible to approach Krishna because our material desires still overwhelm us. So in that connection, it's important to remember another verse from the Bhagavatam later on. In the 14th canto, when Lord Brahma is offering his prayers to Krishna out of his embarrassment, Lord Brahma says, for those who accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal is Parang Param, Vaikuntha, the place where there is no material miseries, not the place where there is danger, at every step. So this ties in with what Queen Kunti was saying also. You know, as long as we're taking shelter of the material world, as long as we're still trying to enjoy, as long as our desire for material enjoyment isn't exhausted, then we'll simply be in a place of danger at every step. But when we take full shelter of Krishna, of His lotus feet, then all this great calamity and danger becomes as easy to cross as the water contained in the hoof print of a calf. Very easy to cross. And then that also led me to a little bit earlier in that chapter, another very famous verse that everyone should memorize. Vijay Prabhu is actually the first devotee to turn me on to this verse. I was having a tough day on Sankirtan, and Vijay enlightened me with this verse. Tatte nukampam susamikshamano bunjane vatmakirtam vipakam ridvag vapurbir vididan namaste jiveta yo muktipade sadayabak. My dear Lord, one who earnestly awaits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it's become his rightful claim. So this verse is very significant not only to the previous verses from the prayers of Queen Kunti, but also significant to today's verse, and also extremely significant for all of us. And Prabhupada explains why in the purport. You know, because oftentimes, even if devotees don't necessarily want to experience calamities, somehow we find ourselves undergoing so many difficulties in life. And sometimes people question, you know, how is it that I'm put into so much misery, so much suffering? Aren't I doing something good with my life? Aren't I devoting my life to Krishna, to God? Aren't I performing transcendental pious activities? Shouldn't I be experiencing some enjoyment? But actually, in the purport, Prabhupada is extremely insightful in explaining exactly why it is that devotees sometimes suffer so incredibly. So it's a very short purport. And just to transfer the full impact of it, I thought I'd just read it. Prabhupada says in the purport, Srila Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son who has simply to remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains alive in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the personality of Godhead. That's pretty amazing. All we have to do is simply remain alive in Krishna consciousness. In other words, he'll be promoted to the kingdom of God. The word susamikshamana indicates that a devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Supreme Lord, even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who fully surrenders unto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges of the enjoying spirit by giving his devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful activities. In other words, the devotees do not experience karma. These things are not karmic reactions. These experiences are personally handcrafted and delivered by Krishna to assist us in achieving ultimate perfection. The purpose of the entire creation of God is to rectify the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord. And therefore, the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed by Krishna to curtail the mentality that produced the activity. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. A sincere devotee earnestly desires to go back to the Lord's abode. Therefore, he willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord within his heart, words, and body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardships a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord, certainly becomes a legitimate son of God, as indicated here by the words Dayabak. Just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the Supreme Pure, Lord Krishna, without undergoing a rigid purificatory process, which may appear like suffering, but which is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord. That's pretty incredible. So, as devotees, when we do undergo so much suffering, I know myself, Krishna has given me plenty because of all my previous improper mentalities. It's always very helpful to remember not only this verse from Lord Brahma, but also these prayers by Queen Kunti. And, you know, even the verse today and these previous few verses that we've gone over. It's very helpful to remember these because it helps put perspective on what we're experiencing, on what we're going through. And even if we're not suffering, it's helpful to remember these verses to remind us of what we should actually be meditating upon as we're going about our Krishna conscious activities. Rather than just feeling like life is grand and, you know, everything is seen with rosy colors, let me figure out ways of enjoying. You know, instead we should be thinking, how can I utilize my lack of suffering to enthusiastically engage in Krishna's service? Rather than thinking, how can I utilize this excess enthusiasm to implicate myself further in the material world? So one way of very easily overcoming all these different obstacles is simply to preach Krishna consciousness. I found through personal experience that sharing Krishna with others is the one easiest, surefire method of not only establishing ourselves in Krishna consciousness, but it also alleviates our misery. There have been so many times when I've gone out to distribute books where my body has just been suffering like anything. And after I've been out there for a few hours, I don't notice it as it happens. But after I've been out for a few hours, I realize, wow, I feel so blissful. I don't feel these pangs of the material world anymore. Because we're directly operating off of Krishna's internal spiritual energy when we engage directly in his service. And then, funny enough, I would find that as soon as I would stop distributing books and I'd be on my way back to the temple, all of a sudden, it's like the whole burden and weight of the suffering would just be gently let back on my shoulders. to remind me, you know, don't take it so easy. So it's all Krishna's mercy, and we just have to remember that. Whether we're enjoying, that's Krishna's mercy also, as devotees. If we're suffering, that's also Krishna's mercy. And above all, especially since we're in the seventh canto, and we're learning about the glories of Prahlad Maharaj, and also because Prabhupada said that our sampradaya follows in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, we should very earnestly take up the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. Because even though Prahlad Maharaj was perfectly purified and he was offered any benediction, he said that he didn't want to go back to the spiritual world, even though he could have. He wanted to stay here with all these suffering conditioned souls, lifetime after lifetime, in the darkest places of ignorance, in the middle of the cities, where everyone's engaged in demonic activities and just suffering so much, but yet they're in so much ignorance they don't even realize they're suffering. This is where he wanted to be, to preach to these people the message of Krishna consciousness and to help alleviate them of the suffering condition that they may or may not even know that they're in. So we should also take up this mood and really try to sincerely endeavor to spread these teachings of Krishna consciousness to all the conditioned souls, especially around here in Los Angeles, since this is where we all live. But for those of you listening on the internet, in whatever location you live, try to share this message of Krishna with everyone you meet. That was Lord Chaitanya's instruction, Yare De Ketari Kaha Krishna Upadesh. Wherever you go, whomever you meet, simply teach them about Krishna. And it's an easy process. It's not like it's very difficult. And it's fun, too. Really, honestly. It's actually fun. I've met a lot of devotees who have these misconceptions about what book distribution is all about. They think that it's some torture or it's some punishment. Oh my God, they're forcing you to distribute books. I've actually heard that. But no, it's not a punishment. It's not torture. It's actually a fun, blissful process. And many people who have never distributed books before and others who may not have known about the ecstasy of book distribution have found out through a monthly Sankirtan festival that we have here in New Dwarka Dham. We've been doing it for 5 months now. This month marks our sixth month of doing it. We'll be having it on the weekend following the Father's Day weekend, which I think is the 22nd, 3rd, and 4th. Yeah. So, through this experience, you know, many devotees have had access to the taste of book distribution, and at the end, when we meet together and we share our experiences and realizations, one thing that I very joyfully hear is how everyone's saying what a great time they had. We all go out together as a group, and we just share Krishna with people, with everyone we meet. People walking by on the sidewalks, people in the shops, customers, people's houses, wherever. We just go down the street. Any building we come to, we try to gain access to the building and distribute books to the people that are inside the building. And anyone in the parking lots, anyone on the sidewalks, we stop and talk to them. And it's really a good time. It's really a lot of fun. Everyone at the end is always complaining, how come we have to stop so early? Why can't we go on longer? So this is Krishna consciousness. This is really the fast-track method of, as Prabhupada said, being very quickly recognized by Krishna. It's not just about being recognized by Krishna. Of course, that is the goal. And it's not even being quickly recognized by Krishna. But in Prabhupada's own words, very quickly recognized. So this is the fast track, not only for our own purification, but also it helps alleviate the suffering of the conditioned souls stuck in these modes of ignorance and passion, and just suffering so much. I've met so many people that when we give them the books, they're just so appreciative of these books. And they're at a loss of words for how to properly thank the devotee who gave them the book and offer their appreciation. I remember one time I was on the Warp Tour and I met this one guy. He was a father. He was there with his kids. And he was just standing there so morose. It was up in Portland. He was just standing there with a long face, kind of looking like a zombie. And I was thinking, my God, look at this guy. So I went up and I talked to him and I said, you know, these are books on yoga and meditation. It helps relieve stress. And when I said it helps relieve stress, even though he was already like a zombie, he just froze. And I said, you've heard of stress before, right? And his jaw just dropped. He's like, really? This helps relieve stress? Wow, I've been looking for this for so long. What's this all about? So I showed them the pictures. I explained a little bit about what the book's about. He gave a donation. He started reading the book on the spot. He just completely ignored me and opened up the book. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I kept distributing throughout the rest of the concert. And at the end of the show, when everyone was leaving, he was still there in the same spot reading that book. And he was so impressed. Even his kid was with him at that point, tugging on his dad's shirt. Come on, Dad, let's go. And he was just like so intent on reading this book. So this is the condition. This is the condition of the world. This is the condition of us, practitioners of Krishna consciousness. We need to seriously take up this mission, try to alleviate the misery and the suffering of the conditioned souls. Because if people are suffering too much, it's not possible for them to understand about Krishna. That's why, for instance, those in the hellish planets can't really understand about Krishna, even though they're suffering so much. But also as devotees, we should actually take our suffering as direct mercy from Krishna. And if we're feeling a little bit elated, a little bit joyful, we should be extra careful. And we should beg Krishna that even though I'm feeling good right now, please help train my mind on your lotus feet. So I think I'll end there if there's any quick comments or questions. Yes, Ru.
Thank you for the nice class. Earlier in the class, at the beginning, you were speaking about how sometimes people join and then life gets really easy and nice and they see things through rose-colored glasses. And sometimes they get, again, captured by the illusory energy. Now, I've also heard the statement that an easygoing life and spiritual life go ill together. So although that may be true, I think every devotee has to take it upon themselves to watch that their life isn't so easy, that they actually take on more and more austerity on behalf of spreading Krishna consciousness. So when Maya comes, I'm sorry, Maya, there's no energy left for you. I'm so absorbed in doing this service here. That's what Maya is looking for. How much haven't you surrendered to Krishna? And the devotee has to voluntarily accept that tapasya, accept a struggle to spread Krishna consciousness, to take that mission in their life. Just like the karmis, they will struggle like anything to take the mission of sense gratification. If anyone else has anything to add to that?
Yeah, actually on that point, two things. One, there's the saying, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So we need to always keep our mind occupied with Krishna and always keep our body engaged in Krishna's service. Then on another point, Prabhupada said that materialists are mad after sense gratification. They have to be mad. They have to be crazy to go to so much endeavor simply for a little bit of sense gratification. But devotees also, to really be successful in devotional life, we have to be mad after Krishna. Prabhupada said that. So devotees also, everyone's a little bit crazy. It's just we need to be crazy for Krishna rather than crazy for gratifying our senses. Yes, Savas Prabhu.
The point that would be kind of suitable here would be that that one shouldn't speculate as to that they know what they actually need in order to execute and be fully engaged. That it's very important that they have authorized devotional service. Mm-hmm. This is extremely important, and no one should consider themselves being out of that realm. Sometimes you're speaking about devotees, and sometimes we, even on this block here, we have devotees that are independent. You know, they don't have to, they depend on the temple for anything. And sometimes they feel that they know what they need for their spiritual life. But Krishna consciousness means accepting authority. And we should understand that a lot of times authority has different lines to it. There's, you know, directly the spiritual master. But we should never think that you can just read Prabhupada's books and think that we know exactly what we need to do. That wasn't really Prabhupada's system. Prabhupada's system was that we directly put ourselves voluntarily under the submission of the GBC, mm-hmm. of ISKCON. And there are lines of authority. So, you know, sometimes we find that devotees, they think that they're going to do what they want to do, and that they're saved, that they're going to actually, you know, they know exactly what they want and what they need. And we see that that doesn't work. This is how problems begin. Until we accept voluntarily authority and how we should do our devotional service under the guidance of authority, one could possibly not be successful. There are some that can be. But the GBC is the governing body, the ultimate authority of ISKCON. And we should hook up with that system and then follow the other line of authority down from the GBC. And then one is protected in the execution of devotional service, and they can go back home back to Godhead.
Yeah, thank you. That's an extremely important point. Extremely important. And naturally, the representative of the GBC here is the temple, and its authority is headed by Savas Prabhu.
Didn't have to say that.
But also in the spiritual world even. There's authority in the spiritual world too. Oftentimes people think, oh, we don't need authority, you know, it's just spontaneous. I can just do whatever I like in Krishna consciousness. But even in the spiritual world, there's authorities. You know, there's Krishna, there's Radharani, there's, you know, for instance, for Radharani and her gopis, there's the Ashashakis. Each one of those has different groups of mandris within the cowherd boys. They have their subgroups. They have their group leaders. And so all the way down, there's authority. There's a chain of authority in the material world, all the way up through the spiritual world, all the way back to Krishna. And so, as you nicely pointed out, we have to embrace that chain. Jai, Granthasri Mad Bhagavatam ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai.